The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Thanks for being with us. We have a jam-packed show today. Charlie Regal is going to be with us. Charlie, of course, I think using the term legendary status in Arizona is maybe a little strong for a guy who's in his mid-40s, but no, I think we'll go with it because he did a great job at Schaap. He went to Tucson for Rich Rod and started owning recruiting in this state. He went to Cal and just absolutely cleaned house and kicked everybody's rear ends down here when they weren't paying attention to what was going on in the state. Went to Idaho State, and through it all, he and there's the four horsemen, I think is what I'm going to call them. So there's Charlie, Kenny Dillingham, Sean Aguano, Vince Amy, four horsemen. They were at dinner last night. Charlie and I have known each other a long time. And full disclosure, I've talked with him quite a bit in the last couple weeks. It's been a gut-wrenching decision for him. I usually don't go that far, but I did. And wag your finger at me. It's fine. I don't care. So Charlie's going to be with us, and I want to go in depth on a whole bunch of things. So his title is going to be the assistant head coach. He is going to be the special teams coordinator. Some people get all wound up like, ooh, titles. That's fine. You want to have somebody to blame. And he's going to work with linebackers. So, but assistant head coach, Charlie Regal. Brock Huard, caught up with Brock yesterday after we were done. Put some of it up on the site already. So Brock Huard, the good friend of the show, but more importantly on Brock's front, is I was watching a game earlier this year where I could have sworn Brock was the agent for Kenny Dillingham. I just felt like it, and which was fine. I'm not being critical. I gave Brock the business about it a little bit because we have that type of relationship, having known each other through the years. But he did three of Kenny's games, and he goes back with him, and there's quite a bit meat. There's a lot of meat on the bone with Brock. I'll just put it to you that way. He follows Charlie Regal, and then Fabs. Speaking about meat on the bone, Fantasy Football Focus with Michael Fabiano, one of our more popular segments. We do it every year during the football season on Tuesdays. Fabs joins us, and he will give you some fantasy for free. Free. Because we have partners. That's how it works here on the show. We don't say, pay us this or that. No, we give you content, and our partners are a big part of it. And one of them is Desert Financial Credit Union. That's what we're brought to you by. Desert Financial Credit Union, they're our title sponsor. We appreciate their support. They take care of you. They take care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. I was with Jeff Mishi yesterday, their CEO. I've got it out of the shot right now. I don't think I can grab it. No, I could grab it. It's right here. So I'm playing with Jeff. I'm with Jeff yesterday, and we were at DC Steakhouse, and we're just talking about where things are, the year coming to an end, and all the things that we've been doing. And he walked, at the end of talking, and he's meeting some of the ASU people. And I'm walking out with him, and he's like, hey, come to my car. Where you park? And I go over to his car, and it's kind of parked by me. And he opens up the trunk, and he's like, here, look at this. I mean, and I didn't know what to say. I mean, I'm not one of those that does well when people give me stuff. I like to do it for others. And I was moved. I really was. I was just like, it's very, very nice. Let me just put this up here one more time because it's so very cool. Partners, that's how you make it in this business and have great ones. Today on the sports docket, I won't say docket. That sounds like events. There is one event today, and that's USA against Iran. I am going to go to downtown Gilbert today when I'm done with the show. I'm going to meet up with the great Mark Beasley. Those in the basketball world know that Bees is the guy that makes it happen. And we're going to go watch USA against Iran. We're also going to talk about a show that I'm working on that I want Bees involved in, a concept. We've got like three concepts we're working on. We have three of our documentaries that got picked up by the Mesa Film Festival. We are artsy. I like it. And Jordan Hamm will be, I think Jordy's going to speak on his doc Friday night in downtown Mesa. We've been so busy with the Dillingham stuff and and all the different angles that the team has come up with. And they've done great work. They've done great work. TV show looks great. It's, you know, that's the story. It's not what is wrong with it. It's not what is wrong with the Cardinals. If you're looking for me to do more of what is wrong, wrong show. Goodbye. Bye-bye. Wrong show. Not doing that. That stuff is just like, let me just bang my head against the definition of insanity is doing the same stuff over and over and over again. They are over with. Like, I watched the Suns last night. There's no Chris Paul. There's no Cam Johnson. You can even say there's no Jay Crowder around. And I'm watching them. And Devin Booker scored 44. Okay. He did it in 40 minutes. But more impressive to me than just the points per minute, he did it on 17 of 28 shooting. Those of you that have watched through the years here, I really like Devin Booker. We shot a pilot, Devin and myself and Lady Law, back in the day with Mark Rita. Back in the day, we shot this pilot for a show, and it came so close to getting picked up nationally. But it was fun. It was exhilarating. He was great. And, you know, back then, he was beating his head against the wall, trying to get 44, and he'd have to do it on like 30, 40 shots. And it was bad. And people are like, oh, man, did you see Book last night? Like, even he knew. Like, you don't want to go score 40 and do it on 35 shots. You don't want to do that. It means you're just jacking stuff up. There was no help around him. And out of that, he had 8 boards and he had 6 steals. And Sacramento's no longer your daddy's Sacramento Kings. They're better. So it was a good win for them last night. They have Chicago in town tomorrow night. Tiger Woods this morning, you're going to see this. So Tiger Woods, Rory said it a couple weeks ago about the LIV when they said, so how do we work through this LIV event? And he said, well, you know, I think there's some things that need to happen. Greg needs to go. So this morning, someone asked Tiger, what about the LIV? And Tiger says, well, Greg needs to go. And then we have the litigation over here, and we have the litigation over there. But when Greg goes, then we can take care of all the other stuff. So it's pretty much like, read between the lines on this deal from Tiger and Rory to Greg Norman. Interesting, just to see how that works. Deion Sanders has been offered the head coaching job at Colorado. There are some people here that want to deal. We want Deion Sanders. You think Deion Sanders is going to last in Boulder for more than, I don't know, a year, 2 years? They already went through that. Go look at Michigan State. They already went through it, a guy that came in and got out. No, I mean, the Dillingham hire, and then I'm going to break for Charlie, but the Dillingham hire, I was at DC Steakhouse yesterday, as I mentioned, and I've been going to that for years, and there was a buzz in the room. I got there early, and there was some NIL that was being worked on. Elijah Badger was there. Jason Conyers was there. The idea that this is not being worked on, that's not true. It's now just focal point. There have been guys, you know, Toby Borgay has been involved in trying to get people interested in it, which is the right thing to do. You have to have parents who have some reach, who have some depth. The Borgays have done a great job down in Tucson. And he's not shy about asking. He's really not shy. But it was just interesting to see some people there yesterday that I hadn't seen before that are showing up now and coming into the party. All right, Charlie Ragel, then Brock Huard, then Michael Fabiano. Chairman of the board, the Iron Man is Jared Nielsen. He steers this ship. And we are back with more with Charlie Ragel next. All right, as promised, Charlie Ragel. Now, people say to me, not just in the last 24 hours, just through the years, why is it you talk so fondly about a high school coach, and why is it you talk about this guy like he walks on water when it comes to in-state recruiting? And my response has been, because Arizona State has not brought him in, and they don't or haven't been involved in local recruiting like they needed to be, and that's just a fact. So I followed Charlie's run from Shap. Charlie and I back in the day would sit with Steve Bellis when Steve was at Hamilton, and Charlie would come down to Channel 3. So to see him through the years arrive at his dream destination. I'm not making that up. I'm not putting words in your mouth, am I?
No, this is exactly where I've always wanted to be. I'm home, you know, and that's special.
The journey to get here, though.
Wow.
Why don't we just back this up? And there's no rush. Are you in a rush?
No, I got plenty of time.
All right, so we got plenty of time. So how did you start your coaching career? Let's not just go back to Shap and what got you into coaching. Who was that?
I think even before you go to Shap, Brad, you know, people have to know a little bit about, you know, my story here in the Valley. You know, my mom's from Mesa. I have family on both sides, my dad's side and my mom's side, obviously, that live here from the East Valley to Scottsdale. You know, I've been coming out here since the 70s. You know, I've been coming out here since, you know, when Arizona had more orange trees than roads. And so, you know, I remember going and seeing my grandmother over in Mesa off a country club when it was gravel roads. Mm. And so, you know, my uncle was involved heavily in the Fiesta Bowl. Ironically, he was a U of A grad and he took me to my first ASU U of A game when I was 7. And there was something that in the colors, the Sparky logo that just resonated with me. And from that point on as a kid, I just was, and the people that really know me, my family, you know, from the time I went to high school, coming out here to the festival every year, I had a routine, man, get to the mall, whether that be the PV mall, which is no more, or, you know, Fashion Square and get me some new ASU gear. And, I couldn't wait to watch the Sun Devils or watch the Fiesta Bowl. So when I moved here in 1999, full time, it was a dream come true. It was a place that and again, you're talking to a kid who grew up in a town of 1200 people. And,
Where was that?
Playas, New Mexico. It doesn't even exist anymore. So it's in the southwest corner of the state, about 30 miles from the Arizona border, southwest corner, and about probably 30 miles. If you went 30 miles south, you'd be in Mexico in just the vast desert. And my dad was in business management for, which a lot of people that are have been around Phoenix for a long time, was in business management for Phelps Dodge. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, again, when I moved here in 99, it was a dream come true. And I started out coaching at Moon Valley High School. And had a nice little run there for 5 years. And then I went to Chaparral twice. The first time as a defensive coordinator under Coach Estabrook. And then I came here to Arizona State, started in December of 05 and worked with Dirk for 13 months before we got let go. Then obviously I went back to what most people know, you know, follow football to Chaparral as the head coach. I was 30 years old and had a 5-year run there. And then obviously got the opportunity to go with Rich to the University of Arizona and again, another 5-year run. And I knew at that point, in order for me to enhance my brand, so to speak, I didn't want to be just the high school guy that got a job opportunity with Rich Rodriguez at the University of Arizona because I had good players. Right. I knew that I could coach. I knew what my capabilities were. And I had the opportunity to go with Justin Wilcox there to Cal. And spent 5 great years with him and hold him in high regard. And then I got the opportunity to be a head coach. And it was something at the time that I was a dream of mine, you know, to be a head coach. And I took that opportunity to go to Idaho State. And then obviously 11 months later, you know, I had no inkling that this would be a spot that obviously Kenny would get. And I would have the opportunity to come back home. And when he presented it to me, it was just, you know, it's too good to be true. And it was something that, you know, myself and my family, we couldn't pass up.
Yeah, no, it's the journey along the way for you is interesting with just the twists and turns and the decisions that you've had to make. If I did the job interview with you and asked you the question of who impacted you most in your coaching career, who would it be? Mm.
I mean, that's tough. I think, you know, my college football coach probably is the first guy that had a significant influence on me about how I approached the game and my love and appreciation for it. But then, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say, you know, Dirk, Rich, and Justin. I've taken, stole, whatever you want to say, from all three of those guys and tried to implement different pieces that I thought they did well. And so it would be those four guys. And I know that's not one specific guy, but there's four great men there that have helped me get to where I'm at.
You have this reputation of being a fierce recruiter. And I think that there's this side of you that, well, he's a football coach. Recruiting's part of the deal. And I don't know, does it bug you that that's kind of your calling card to people is, well, he's a fierce recruiter rather than what a great football coach. Football. They're not demeaning you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
I 100% do. And, you know, I think that I grew out of that, me personally, when I went to Cal. You know, what people have to remember is, you know, when you come from high school and you go to college, you know, I'm starting all over again. And, you know, Rich Rodriguez had a system that he wanted to run, and we ran that system. You know, we did what Rich wanted to do, and there's a lot of merit to that. I got to grow and do what Charlie Regal wanted to do from a special team standpoint when I went to Cal. And so I think personally and professionally, I really enhanced my growth and my brand from a football side at Cal. But I understand, you know, recruiting is part of the game. You know, I've got a gregarious personality. I'm about people. I love spending time and getting to know people. And I'm about relationships first and foremost. Loyalty is extremely, extremely important to me. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes that gets lost on people because of who I am. And, you know, I get it. And listen, I hear the detractors and I hear, oh, you know, they only got these guys at Arizona. You know, this, look, I took six guys out of here my first full year recruiting at Cal.
How did you do that?
Relationships. I mean, you know, I tell people all the time, I'm not going to work. I mean, like, I'm calling guys that I've known for 20 years, mm-hmm. guys that I've gone out and had a beer with, guys that we've got dinner when I'm in town, like guys that I've known for that are friends. And so I think that, you know, that's, you know, we sat around last night, we went and had dinner, myself, Vince, Sean, and Kenny. This is something that we've talked about for an extremely long time. Mm-hmm. This isn't just something, oh, Kenny gets the job, fly by the seat of your pants, pull up, and let's go back to Phoenix. This is something we've been talking about, plotting, planning, and whoever got the position to make it happen was going to make it happen. And you know, it happened to be Kenny, and I'm extremely happy for him, and that's why we're here. And so, you know, getting those kids was simply based on relationships and then relating to those kids, knowing what they wanted to do and selling them on that vision. It's no different though. You know, in 2014, I took over Hawaii, the state of Hawaii, recruiting for Arizona. I went in there first year and we took the number one player out of the state. We beat 35 schools to get Michael Olatise. And, you know, again, Chad Ike, who was my strength coach at Chaparral, had moved back to Hawaii where he's from, made the connection with me and the family, relationships, worked through that, and all of a sudden Michael Altice is a Wildcat. So, you know, the game, as you and I have talked about, the recruiting game has changed, and what we have to do here, and we talked about it last night, is the NIL is now – the relationships will be the icing on the cake that will push us, you know, through. But we've got to be able to elevate the NIL money and get on a competitive scale with some of these programs that are taking these kids, the top kids, out of here. And if we can do that, which I anticipate we will be able to, mm-hmm. we're going to have good success.
Okay, so walk me through, and for the audience that's heard all this about NIL, and I've been banging my fist on NIL since about the last year and a half. Like, this tidal wave's coming. And so if you're not prepared for it, which Arizona State wasn't, now I believe they are. I was with Knapp Lawrence yesterday. Knapp, of course, stood up and gave $1 million. You know Knapp. There needs to be about 10, 15 more Knapps.
Right? Yes.
I mean, you've got to have a pool that is, I don't even know if there's a number that you have to hit. The fan base in the last 24, 36 hours is so exhilarated. Do you have a number you guys need to get to?
You know, I don't know. Not yet. I think there probably is. And I think that's kind of a moving target as well, right? That could change year to year. Yes. And I think as we work through the dynamics, we'll get there. But, you know, I think the one thing that's going to make this staff unique, and again, everybody loves us until we coach that first game.
9 months, man.
As I told Kenny last
night, greatest.
Ask for everything, man, because we're undefeated until September. You know, ask for everything. So, you know, in all seriousness, though, it's you know, Sean saying, "Hey, Kenny, we got to go down here to Chandler and meet with these guys because these people want to get in and they want to give us money." It's my cousin. You know, I spoke with my uncle, his daughter, who has been on the Fiesta Bowl, started the Arizona Bowl down in Tucson. She works for the Arizona Sports and Tourism. Nikki Balich. She calls me, tells me about a guy. Hey, this guy wants to give money to ASU Sun Devil football. He's worth several hundred million dollars. I need to get you guys together, you and Kenny and him. And I think that, you know, that's the difference, is we're going to be able to touch a different core of people than a coach that just comes in here. Everybody's excited. ASU has their core folks. But we have another group of people, myself, Sean, you know, Coach Amy, obviously Kenny, that is different than what's been here in the past. And I think that's going to allow us to tap into some different resources.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on that. It's, if you could give the fans an idea on when you go in and meet someone today and it's recruiting conversation, does the conversation immediately turn to, well, what are you paying in terms of NIL? Do the parents hint around at it? I'm not going to besmirch where you just came from, okay?
Right.
Space at Idaho State asking for NIL. It's not even discussed probably, or very little. In this world, have you already found that they're trying to get the conversation directed towards how much you're going to pay us, rather than we're going to take care of your son, he's going to get a great education, we're going to get him ready for the NFL. No, we just want to know how much we're getting paid.
Yeah, I think it's a mix of both. I mean, at the end of the day, right, money makes the world go round. So,
yeah.
You know, people want to get their money. I think that's a part of it for sure. But I think at the same time, you know, the people are still interested and concerned about all of those things that you mentioned. Relationships, education.
Yeah.
And then I think it's, you know, based on who the player is, it's all relative to what we talk about in the NIL department.
How much of it is going to be reading the I'll just use it, the BS meter. Well, said school over here is offering X, that you guys have to get to X.
Yeah. I think there's a big piece of that. And that goes without saying, and I think in recruiting in general.
Yeah.
And then I think it talks to the talent of the kid, you know, how do we deem him in terms of a talent and a want and a need and, you know, obviously supply and demand. Right. And I think that's what's going to ultimately we'll come down to. And, you know, we're going to have to take that on a case by case basis.
Look at transfer portal. Then how do you address transfer portal? Is it this kid's moved around? This kid is ready to move. There's a story that a kid that was at Idaho State has already been offered by ASU that's out there.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably the way to go. It's, you know, from my view, Charlie, seeing this thing and all the ups and downs that they've had, more downs than ups until now, it's go find that kid that, okay, you didn't get the Arizona kid on the front end, but at least you made the run. You had the relationship. And if it came down to the end where they decided to go to X school in the SEC or stay home, go. If they go, but get them back. Get that SEC kid that made the mistake, because a lot of them make mistakes. They go to places where they just are not going to play. Everybody tells them, oh, you're going to be great, you're going to be awesome. And more often than not, they're miserable. So to me, that seems to be the strategy. Or a kid like X Valaday this last year, who kills it at Wyoming. Okay, come from Wyoming to the Pac-12. That seems to be the right path.
Yeah, no. I think you're spot on with that. I think if you know, sitting in the meetings last night that we had, that's what Coach Dillingham's all about. Like, hey, let's, you know, if a kid doesn't come to Arizona State, that's a local kid. I promise you one thing, Brad, it's not going to be because he didn't get recruited here.
Yeah.
If he goes to the SEC or the Big Ten, I promise you we'll be one of the first to have offered him. We'll know all about him. We'll have had him over here. We'll have recruited the heck out of him. And he just made a decision to go somewhere else. And to your point, if things don't work out, then we're going to be able to bring that young man back home and have hopefully have success here in the Valley. But that is a part of our bigger plan.
When a kid is in the portal, how do you evaluate them? Like the reasons why?
I think that's, there's a lot of different layers to that. I think one is he playing first and foremost. And then if we can turn on some tape and get a look there, that's obviously a huge factor. And then it's doing all the due diligence off the field, all the homework on him, all the background stuff and talking to him, as many people as you can that know him, references, character, academics, social, practice habits. I mean, we're talking, we're looking at a kid yesterday, for example, and we're projecting him as a linebacker. And, it's like, okay, hey, strength coach said, how does he eat? Sounds like a funny question. How does he eat? When he came on his visit, how'd he eat? Is he a big eater? Will he work to gain the weight? All of that stuff matters, and it's all relative based on the kid. And, you have to do as much due diligence and homework as you can. And then you're making an educated guess at that point.
If a kid transfers from high school to high school, this used to be the case. That was a red flag to coaches. Some coaches.
Yeah.
Now, yeah.
So now, had a little bit of that.
But I'd put it that way. Now, especially they transfer to three high schools, but nowadays, transfer is just part of the deal. And at positions like quarterback, for instance, quarterbacks, they're not playing, they're gone. They don't wait. How do you evaluate quarterbacks, Charlie?
Yeah, I think first you got to go back and before I answer that, say, in terms of recruiting, I still think it's a red flag if you have a kid that transfers multiple times. I'm not talking about once, but yeah. I think if he transfers a second time, you got to look and find out why. And sometimes there's some legitimate reasons.
Sure.
I think when you get beyond that, it looks, very seldom. Have I had a kid that's transferred that I've coached 3+ times that's ever panned out, I think when you talk about quarterbacks, that's a different dichotomy, right? The dynamics of that are different. They come off the board different. They get recruited different. But I still think at the end of the day, you have to look at those things that we're just talking about, because if you're any good, anywhere you go, there's going to be competition. Mm-hmm. And at some point, you're going to have to beat somebody out to get the job. And if all you're doing is bouncing around place to place until you find a slot, when adversity strikes, you're not going to know how to handle it. And you can't be a calm presence, a great leader out on the field, not having gone through some adversity and understanding what it takes to dial in, say, all right, we've been here before, boys, let's go. And go execute and do what you need to do. There has to be some sort of adversity that brings you through the fire, so to speak, so that when you need it and when the battles come, you have it.
When you have a player that says to you, this is how my quarterback guru or my quarterback coach says I'm supposed to do it. And look, there's some very nice guys that are in that business here in the Valley. There are. And I think that there is a place for that. But I'm hearing more and more, even at the college, I've even had some guys tell me in the NFL that, well, I've got a player here that's saying, this is how my offensive line coach in the offseason tells me to do it, so I'm going to do it that way.
Yeah.
Are you finding that to be the space where kids are now saying, my guru is saying to do it this way, I'm not going to do it the way you're coaching me?
Not yet. There it's coming. I mean, I've heard stories and talked to guys that, alluded to the same stuff that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And like I tell people, and I agree with you, there's a place for a trainer, a off season type of guy to help your mechanics, what have you, but they're not the guys in here pouring over the film for, 14, 15 hours a day, 7 days a week during the football season. And, umpteen hours in the off season. And guess what? The guru, he gives you the techniques, he works with you. And then you go out and when you do good, that's my guy. When you don't do good, it's coach's fault. That's a heck of a position to be in. Those guys are a lot smarter than me. I want in on that.
That's so true. I get the, hey man, you got to put my guy on. My guy is killing it over here. My guy is killing it over there. What about this? He did.
No lose, man. They're in a win-win situation.
That is funny. Charlie Ragel with us for a couple of minutes. Now at Arizona State, what is your title at ASU? What are you coaching? What is your title?
So I'm going to be the assistant head coach, special teams coordinator, and I'm also going to work on the defensive side of the ball with the linebackers.
It's a lot.
It is. I'm up for it.
Yeah.
I got a few more years in me, a little bit more energy still saved up. I think I'm going to be all right. And you know what? Again, man, when you get up every morning and you come to work at a place like this is home. Like, you know, Kenny said in his press conference, this is a special place. Mm-hmm. We're selling something that we believe in and that we've always wanted to do. This is the place we wanted to do it at. There's no faking this. This is we're Sun Devils, man. And this is a unique opportunity. Very rarely, Brad, in this business, you get an opportunity to come home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mom, as you and I talked about, is 74 years old. My mother-in-law is 81. I want my kids to spend time with their grandmothers. You know, my older brother's here. Again, a ton of family across the valley. This is a special place to me. You know, since I've been coming out here, like I said, since the 70s, Sun Devil Stadium, I mean, I used to come and watch. I remember, we'd come out here. I remember vividly when Rocket Ismail's brother Quadri was playing for Syracuse. Mm-hmm. and they were playing Colorado. And we came the night before. My uncle had a meeting up in the press box at Sun Devil Stadium. We went down. I was probably 13, 14 years old and on the field watching them practice and just those kind of memories, you know, won our first state championship in here at Moon Valley High School in 2004. Won my last state championship in here in 2011. There's so many memories here. It's just a special, special place. And it's not hard to sell it when you believe in it and it's authentic.
Did you by chance see Kenny's press conference live?
I did. I did.
When he was choked up, were you choked up?
Yeah, I'll start crying right now. And you know what? I haven't, and you and I talked about this, I haven't had that moment yet where I just sit alone and
ball.
Yeah, yeah, like it's coming. Nobody, nobody really knows how much this means to me. And they're my wife and my close-knit family, but this isn't for TV. This isn't for recruiting. This is what I wanted. And like I said, you very rarely in this business get the opportunity to come home and do this. And I'm very, very blessed and very, very fortunate to be in this role. And it's not something that I'm going to take lightly.
I want to ask you a couple questions about Kenny, but before I do that, I do have to ask you about Idaho State. So Your journey took you up to Cal. You had an opportunity, correct me through this. You had an opportunity about a year ago to possibly go to Oregon, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
And you decided.
Go ahead. No, just the day that I got the Idaho State job that they offered it, Kenny called me like an hour later and said, I'm going to be the OC at Oregon. I want you to come with me. And I was leaving my hotel room and I hadn't even told my wife that I'd got the job. I tried, but I hadn't got a hold of her yet to tell her that they had offered me the job at Idaho State. And so I told Kenny, yeah, I'm coming. And then I got home and, you know, we decided as a family, hey, this is my dream, man, to be a head coach. And so we went after that and that's where we went.
You went to Idaho State and it's a program that is down. It's been down for a long time, but you wanted to be a head coach. And looking back on it, what did you do right at Idaho State?
Well, I think I surrounded myself with good people. I think that's the most important thing that you can do in life and not yes men, but good people that are going to hold you accountable. And when things don't look right, they're going to tell you that. And, you know, that's the hardest part is you take a job like that. And I know there's people, I mean, I'm taking it right now. And I've disappointed a lot of people and that's not easy, you know, and a guy that is what I'm built on, you know, the loyalty, that's not easy and it hurts, but, you know, at the end of the day, I owe it to myself, Carrie, Chaz, and Kaylee Regal before anything else. I have to make the best decision for us. And I made a business decision, and I am very grateful to Pauline Theros and President Kevin Satterlee for the opportunity. Coach Cutter, I know he's disappointed, and that hurts me, that it hurts him. But as Dirk said to me, you're the one that has to live it, you know, and Dirk's a businessman. And, you know, he made a decision to, you know, to leave Boise State to come to Arizona State. Granted, it wasn't after 1 year, but, you know, everybody has decisions to make in their life. And, you know, I answer to the good man upstairs, and, you know, those three people, you know, Carrie, Chaz and Kaylee, and I made the best decision for our family, and I'm at peace with it.
It's fair to say you agonized over this.
Probably ruined our whole week of Thanksgiving, you know, just going back and forth every day, trying to make the best decision for everybody involved. And that wasn't just my family. It was the coaches, you know, all the people that I had hired. But, you know, that's the coaching business. And again, I don't make light of it. And I don't think I just walk away. No, it was an extremely difficult decision. And, you know, it still bothers me, but because I care about those people. But at the end of the day, I made the right decision.
Yeah. In full disclosure, Charlie and I spoke last week on this stuff. You know, just it's been, I would say that it tore you up. I don't know what was the tipping point for you, but you were pretty torn, I'd say.
Yeah, it was extremely difficult, but, you know, I made the right decision.
The what is your, from afar, okay, what has not worked right? And without, I don't need you to throw people under the bus. I just want to know, why has Arizona State been mired in mediocrity, as I like to say, for the last, since Bruce Snyder's era, where they're there at some point and then they dip, and they're there and they dip. What is it from your view that you guys are going to do differently?
I think there's several different layers to the onion, you know, but I think primarily, you know, the support, as Kenny said, has to be all in. And you know, a city that we've seen, you and I, and, you know, lifelong Phoenicians, this is, you know, trended towards the pro market. You still have your core 25 to 35,000 diehard Sun Devils, and they haven't had enough consistent success to bring those fringe people all in. I think that the guys that have come here have done an okay job, again, not throwing anyone, of recruiting the state, and they haven't been all in. And, you know, without getting into names of the different coaches, I think all of them came here thinking like, hey, this is a good job, but it's going to help me get to my dream job. And the difference is we sat around last night eating dinner, the four of us. Nobody wants to go anywhere. We're here. And I think when you're passionate about something and you want it bad enough, you'll do all the necessary things to give you the best opportunity to win. And I think that's what we're going to do. And that's going to separate us from the rest.
Last question, Kenny Dillingham, what is it we're getting here? Charlie, you've known him for years. What is it we're getting here in Arizona?
He was 18 years old. And one time I asked a question about at Chaparral, I asked a question about why people do things and why you do this particular subject that we were talking about a certain way. And at 18, he looked at me and says, you know, coach, you always have to take a look and ask yourself, is the juice worth the squeeze? And I said, this kid's 18 years old, man. That's pretty perceptive.
Pretty good.
Yeah. He's ahead of his time. You know, he's a high energy guy, which is, you know, I see myself in him in that regard, but his intellect and his maturity has always been further ahead than his age. And he's passionate about being here, and that's what's going to separate him from all the rest.
I appreciate you. Look forward to seeing you down the road. Thanks for the time.
Brad, you're my man. Appreciate you. Thanks for everything. Take care.
Charlie Ragle, and we're back with more after this timeout. Right, I wanted a national view on the Kenny Dillingham hire, and none better than Brock Huard. I heard Brock do a game on Fox where Oregon was – who was it Oregon was playing?
Ooh, yeah. I think we had Oregon three times this year. We had Oregon, UCLA. We had Oregon, Washington. We had one other Oregon, BYU. So I had Kenny Dillingham in Oregon three different times this year.
I thought you were his agent, Brock.
I'm looking for a commission. Oh, Benetti and I would have to split it, but we're fine. I'll take 1.5. Benetti could take 1.5. Yeah, we gave that guy our full stamp of approval in ways we don't do an awful lot with coordinators, yes. You know?
Yes. But he's
pretty good.
I'm wondering about your fascination. Sounds like not using the right terms, but you really believed Kenny Dillingham was ready for a head coaching gig and hearing you talk about him, but that wasn't always the case, right? I mean, these guys have to grow into their role. And so what is it about Kenny Dillingham coming here to Arizona State? Because a lot of people are saying ASU can't figure it out. They have to hire a 32-year-old who's never been a head coach. And yet when I hear you, and I respect you immensely on a lot of things, but in the football side of it, why him?
Well, there's a couple factors here that I think go into play. And as far as being a head coach, there will be a learning curve. So I'm not going to check the box and say, yep, this guy can absolutely be a leader man and he's a program, the face of a program, and can handle everything that that position requires. Because you all know that in Tempe, it is. There's not many, in my opinion, there's not enough men who can do that job going in, qualified to do that job, as there are openings every single year. So as a head coach, I'm not gonna put my full stamp. As a coordinator, as a human being, as someone, Brad, who has made the biggest jump in my 14 years of covering college sports, of sitting with coordinators year in and year out, so call it 16 games a year for 14 years, what's that coming up to? 300 or so situations where I sit with coordinators, there's not been one that made a bigger jump in impression on me than Kenny Dillingham. When I had him in Memphis 5-6 years ago, I thought, who is this guy? He is at that point, what was he, 26, 27? Like, this guy is so young. He felt so immature to me. Like, I don't get it. What does Mike Norvell see in this guy? I don't feel it. Fast forward now 5 years and sitting with him before that BYU game. And I'm like, is that the same Kenny Dillingham? Is that the same guy from 5 years ago? And the answer is no, it's not the same guy. His years in Memphis, his years at Auburn, his years in growth and development. He is a leader of men on an offense. He is a builder of human beings. He has taken Bo Nix and Bo Nix, I mean, come on now. As a pro scout said to me in the booth, I've never seen a guy change and transform in 1 year the way Bo Nix did. And Kenny Dillingham's positivity, his approach, his maturity, and flat out his scheme is that good to see that kind of growth. So I think that's why, we lauded him time and again in multitude of broadcasts this season.
Rock here with us for a couple of minutes. Let me back up in the preparation for games. This is kind of inside baseball, but I think for fans, you can lend them an awful lot. When you sit in meetings on a Friday, or it's a Zoom call or a conference call with someone like Kenny Dillingham, you are able to pick them apart pretty quickly about their football IQ, right?
Yes.
And so what are some of the questions that you've had with Kenny, some of the conversations or philosophical that you feel like you can share with this audience? Or maybe, Brad, come on, I can't.
I think it's this way. And I think your audience understands this. And I know you do, Brad. Someone that can explain something in a very concise, quick manner that the whole room understands is at a different level. So you could sit with people and you have in your media career and you're like, oh, that's a smart guy, but why did it take him 4 minutes to answer that question? Right. And then you could sit with others and go, holy smokes, he just made me think about that. And I just got that in 10 seconds. And that's what he was able to do for everyone in our room, for our director and producer, for sideline, for play by play, for color analysts, the five of us that sit in there and ask questions, all five walked away with the same feeling like, wow, I actually understood what he was saying, like that. And therefore, guys, when you put in an offense and you lead an offense and you got a new system that can come in year one and hit the ground running like that, as they did at Oregon, that resonates. That speaks volumes. His ability to say, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to sequence these plays. Before the UCLA game in particular, you could just tell he was like, this is an NFL staff, right? McGovern and Ken Norton, they view the college game and are calling things like they do at the college level like they did at the NFL level, and it's a different game. The numbers are different. The hashes are different. Space is different. There's going to be a multitude of opportunities for us, and frankly, we can't wait to exploit them. And then what happened in the game? They exploited them up and down the field all day long as UCLA could not adjust, as he was constantly a play ahead, a step ahead, a scheme ahead, and therefore this opportunity comes knocking his way.
You and I have chatted through the years. I remember one time you told me about a coach's meeting you walked out of, and you're like, the guy didn't say anything for 15 minutes. He just wanted to get it done. A lot of times those meetings, you get very little. And when it was with Kenny Dillingham, it was a meat sandwich. Or, no, Kenny's about on par with most every coordinator that we talk to.
No, Kenny's a cut above. Yeah, Kenny is a cut above. And there's, in that class this year, this will be our 16th game. And to be honest with you, compared to where we started 14 years ago, and some of this is trust and relationship that's built over time. There's no question about it. But by and large, Brad, these conversations are infinitely more transparent than they were 14 years ago. I think the Nick Sabans having Hard Knocks on campus realized, and people looked around and go, wow, if he's being this open and he's this transparent and he knows how to market his program, maybe we should do the same. So there is very rarely a meeting that we walk out of where there's nothing or there's very little. The majority of them have a lot of meat on the bone, and then we attack it over the course of the broadcast. As I said, Kenny's ability to explain so quickly, so confidently, so concisely was the biggest difference, maybe. And as I said, put him in a class with Lincoln Riley's right there. Chip Kelly's right there. I mean, from an offensive mind, and by the way, those are the two that Kenny watches, that that he studies, that he learns from, that he takes from, that he implements into his own system. You know, the whole question now is going to be, how do I surround myself with other Kenny Dillinghams? How do I find the same kind of coordinators? Because you can't do it alone. He will be defined at ASU by the quality of defensive coordinator he hires. He will be defined at ASU by the amount of staff that he surrounds himself that is as bright and in other areas better than he is. And I think through the interviewing process, that had to be most appealing, because when you sit down with him, he's humble. He's not a big ego. He's from your neck of the woods down there in Scottsdale, as is his wife. He's got a young child. He's going home. And now the biggest key, as you evaluate it, will be the supporting cast around him. Because as an X's and O's guy, he's a star. Now you've got to have other stars around you to fill in the other gaps.
Before I get you out of here, the question from fans has been brought up quite a bit. It's not just the last 24 hours since he was hired, but since his name surfaced once Herm was shown the permanent transfer portal back in September. And that is, can he handle a 50-year-old telling him, you're wrong? And can he tell a 50-year-old, you're wrong? Mm-hmm. Is there something to that, Brock?
I think there is something to that, because the spots he's been, correct me if I'm wrong, it was Mike Norvell at Memphis for all those years, young climber, up-and-comer like he is. At Auburn for that season, it was Malzahn, right? For the year that he was there with Bo and everything else. Obviously with Lanning, equally 38-year-old young head coach. So he's not necessarily, you know, and he's a high school coach before any of that. So yeah, that will be a step of maturity, but you're going to see this and you're going to feel this, and your fans who don't know him, you're going to walk away going, is that real? Can he truly, as Jason Benetti said on two or three occasions, my play-by-play partner on a crew this year, he's like, gosh, isn't it just refreshing? He's so positive. Like in a sport that beats you down and failure that is real, he's just a humble, positive. He's got a smile all the time. He almost communicates with a smile. Like he just has a joy for what he's doing. And, you know, when you're 32 and you've been on the fast track as he has been, and I know how blessed that he feels as just a high school player and turned high school coach, turned at ASU and Norvell really quickly in his mid-20s, and then a coordinator in his late-20s, and then going from Auburn in the SEC to the success at Oregon with Bo this year. Like, wow, it has been a blessed journey at just 32. Adversity will hit. Those old 50-year-old, codgy, difficult guys, they will come into his face. But man, does he have an uber-positive, humble presence that is very, very attractive.
Yeah, he's going to need it at a place that has been mired in mediocrity forever. I think it's a great hire, but it's what is behind door number four with the NCAA investigation and the culture and infrastructure that he's walking into. Can it finally be changed where, hey, we're going to El Paso, it's a great year. No, it's not. I mean, I like getting the boots in El Paso, but celebrating going to the Sun Bowl or the Vegas Bowl back in the day should never happen. And that's what he's walking into.
Yeah. And the first biggest tell, I think, as I said, will be look at who he surrounds himself. What does the rest of that staff look like? Is it all just kind of GAs? He will certainly pull from Oregon, you would expect to some degree, or some of his past in other places. Who and how much quality says, yeah, I want to be a part of that. I want to hitch my wagon to that young star because we've got an opportunity. It's young as he is, and as much as he's climbing and how fast he's climbed, I want to be a part of that rocket ship. That will be the next real tell in this hire, is surround himself with people even better than he is.
It's good seeing you. I appreciate your time and your insights. As always, stay safe. Have a great holiday.
You too, Brad. See you, bud.
There's Brock Cured with us, and we're back with more after this timeout. And now it's Fabs. It's the Hall of Famer. He's in the holiday season. He's in the festive mood. That is why the mailbag is full of questions about Jelani Woods. If I would have told Fabs back, I don't know, in August, by the way, we're going to start a November segment with Jelani Woods, Fabs would have said what exactly? What would the Hall of Famer have said?
After the first few months of this season? Okay. I mean, it makes sense. Hey, Jelani Woods is not the strangest name that we're going to talk about, okay? How about Zonovan Knight?
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, yeah, I mean, all of a sudden, Mike White's a superstar. Zonovan Knight is the starting running back for the Jets. I don't know that for sure, but he had a big game last week. I have no idea. Tight end is a dumpster fire. Yeah. So, is he worth an ad? Yeah. Do you want to play him against the Cowboys this week? Probably not. I think he could probably do better off the wire, but he's now in the conversation after having a big game against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, it's a name that's out there, and a lot of questions in the mailbag about Chiefs and obviously the Melvin Gordon deal. And I look at that, and I'm like, Pacheco's McKinnon. What is this all about? Is this just for the next 4 weeks, Melvin go fumble a couple times, take some hits so we don't get beat up? And what's this about, Fabs?
I don't even know that Melvin's going to get like a whole lot of playing time. I think this is more of Clyde Edwards-Helaire is hurt, and I think he's kind of on the outs there based on his usage, which has been non-existent before he got hurt. And I mean, the Chiefs also went out and grabbed like Bryan Edwards. They're just stockpiling veteran players. So I don't know that it's going to affect Pacheco's value this week. I will say that I don't love the matchup against the Bengals, who just held Derrick Henry to very minimal rushing totals this past weekend. But right now, I wouldn't worry about Melvin impacting anyone's backfield usage in Kansas City. Not now. Maybe in a week or two, but not at this point.
Worth an ad?
No. Yeah. And I love Melvin. He's a friend of mine. He's been on my show multiple times. It's going to be a committee either way. And I still think Pacheco's the starter. I still think McKinnon's going to be the guy who's going to be the change of pace back, the guy that they'll use as a pass catcher. And Melvin will be there as the third guy, maybe as depth. I mean, remember, they used Ronald Jones last week, and I don't know that they love Ronald Jones.
Interesting. Fabs is with us for a couple of minutes. The Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, SiriusXM Fantasy Dirt, where he drops the stars. You had stars, I saw, earlier this week on your show.
Brett Michaels was on.
I know. Look at you.
I love it.
That's a one text for you, though, isn't it? You guys are on like a one text basis.
I am a big hair metal guy.
Yeah.
And so Poison was one of my favorite bands growing up. I have many. But yeah, it was awesome. He was really nice too. Really good dude. Hopefully I'm going to get him in a fantasy league next year. Maybe I'll get him into my league or the Allison Chains League. Play for some charity. I think he was up for that. But yeah, super good guy and super into the Steelers. So he was pretty happy about last night.
SI.com, you can find Fab's content as well. A lot of questions about the Bengals. So Joe Mixon, concussion, Jamar Chase. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? Strategy with Bengals?
I think the Bengals held out Jamar one more week because they wanted him to be 100% for the Chiefs game. This is a big game. Mm-hmm. Big game for both teams. The Bengals obviously didn't start off the season all that great, but they're playing better lately, and they wanted Jamar 100% or at least close to it for this game. So I would assume, barring any sort of setback, that Jamar will be back. Now, Mixon, I'm not sure. It's still too early in the week to know. every time this year, it seems a player has been concussed, he's missed at least one game. So I don't know that he'll be back this week for sure. Again, we'll find out more as the week goes on. But Samaje Perine, even though his numbers weren't massive, wasn't bad. He was getting most of the backfield touches. So if Mixon can't go, Perine's in that flex conversation in what should be a pretty high-scoring game. A
couple other questions out of the mailbag. Josh Jacobs, what do you see? What do you hear?
So he was phenomenal. Yeah. Boy, he helped you win in Week 12. He was just great. That long touchdown run in overtime to seal it, dealing with the calf injury. Now, what I'm hearing is that he's not going to practice much this week, if at all, and they're going to try to treat that calf 100% like around the clock. Mm. But my guess is that he will go into the weekend questionable. And that obviously is a bit of a cause for concern. He was questionable going into last week, and look what he did. So if you have Josh Jacobs, you probably want Zamir White as insurance. That's going to be a late window game. They're playing the Lightning Bolts this week, also known as the Chargers. So I would probably pick up Zamir White just in case, because I think Jacobs is probably going to go into the weekend as questionable or a game time decision, and it's a late window game.
Okay. Well, for some reason, we're getting a lot of questions about Mike White. Just, I don't know if people want Fabs to go off or if you've
seen. No, you know what? Here's the thing.
Yeah.
This season has been crazy. Mm-hmm. Okay. Geno Smith is a top 10 fantasy quarterback. And Russell stinks. Russell's awful. He doesn't even belong on a roster right now. It's that bad. He's got 8 touchdowns. And we're going into week 13. Hey, Brad, last year, he had 8 touchdowns in the first 4 games.
Yeah.
And in the year before that, he had 9 touchdowns, I think, in his first 2. He's been horrible. So whatever the reason is, I don't know. He's just not playing good football right now. And the Broncos are a mess. So I wouldn't be shocked if Mike White was actually a viable fantasy option when the matchup's right. And guess what? He's got Minnesota this week. The matchup's right. And quarterback is not a good position this year. Okay, outside of the big names. Even some of the big names, though. Like Justin Herbert has just started to look like Justin Herbert.
He was great for me this weekend. Big game last week. It's about time.
Right. Lamar hasn't been good this year. No. Like he had the first 3 games, he was awesome. Since then, he scored 2 games over 20 points. That's it, including last week. And he's got Denver this week, which is not a great matchup. Russell stinks. Rodgers has been bad most of the year. Tom Brady has not been as good as Tom Brady has been in the past this season. There's no question about that. Matthew Stafford was bad, and now he's hurt. I think he's probably going to miss the rest of the season. Quarterback is a nightmare right now. So Mike White's going to get picked up in a lot of leagues, and he's got some pretty good matchups down the stretch. I'm not saying that Mike White is the next coming of Joe Willie Namath, but the guy looked pretty good last week. He scored more points in that game than Zach Wilson has ever scored in a single game in his year-plus career. And Zach Wilson's done in New York. He's toast. Yeah. Like, I think in the offseason, they're going to try to trade him. He's done. The teammates of Mike White, they were loving him after the game. You didn't see that with Zach Wilson. I don't know that Robert Saleh can go back to Zach Wilson and actually not lose his team. So Mike White's going to be the guy. Could be a high-scoring game against the Vikings. I'm starting Garrett Wilson. I'm starting Mike White. If I need a quarterback in 2 QB leagues, I think he is certainly a starter. And that backfield, though, that's where we have the question. Last week, James Robinson was a healthy scratch. Mm-hmm. I remember the inactives came in, and I was like, why is he inactive? I don't know what he did. Maybe he had too much turkey. Maybe they just have got some issues with him. I don't know, behind the scenes. So, like, if Michael Carter can't play this week, and there's a very distinct possibility that he won't, you're looking at Ty Johnson, but more strangely, I guess, Zonovan Knight,
yeah,
who led the backfield in touches. Like, this guy came out of nowhere, and the Vikings are not great against the running backs this year. So, like, all of a sudden, that dude, Zonovan Knight, who I got to be honest with you, I never heard of him. He could end up being a fantasy starter. It's crazy.
The Hall of Famer has not heard of Zonovan White. I mean, that's
have you like no, Zonovan? No. Zonovan Knight. I mean, like, who the hell is that?
Yeah, where we are this year.
I know 3 deep at the running back position for the Jets. I figured I was okay there, and apparently I'm not.
All right, before I get you out of here, we have a lot of teams on buys. What do you like this week? Who do you not like? You got a few people, and you're like, yeah, I really, really like this situation.
You only got 2 teams on buy this week. So you got the Panthers and the Cardinals. And then next week, is Bimageddon.
Bimageddon's next week.
Or Bipocalypse, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And it sucks that there's six teams on a bye with fantasy playoffs on the line, and you only got two this week. That makes no sense to me. So Trevor Lawrence, who kind of came of age last week against the Ravens, what a great game. Really like him against Detroit this week. I think you could play him with a lot of confidence. Jamal Williams, who just all he does is score touchdowns, he's going to be a good play this week against the Jaguars in that same game. At wide receiver, I like George Pickens this week. I like a couple of rookies. I like Pickens and Garrett Wilson. Both have really good matchups. Pickens, of course, playing against Atlanta. And Wilson, we talked about playing against the Vikings. Tight end, though, is a dumpster fire. Like, every week, there's, like, dudes like Josh Oliver, really? Like, Josh Oliver was, like, was a top five. Really? Okay. Good luck with that. So, if you're hurting a tight end, like, you can go Evan Engram in that same game. Tyler Conklin's got a revenge game. David Njoku's been he's been back the last couple of weeks. Looked good last week. You could play him. And also, I mean, keep in mind, whether you like him or not, and if you do like him, I think it's a little weird, Deshaun Watson's back this week. And I've been talking about this on my show. It's kind of slimy that he was suspended 11 games. When was the last time we saw a player suspended for an odd number of games? It's always 2, 4, 6, 8. They had him come back because it would make news against the Texans. Mm-hmm. Just saying, that's a little slimy. But
no, it's a lot slimy.
Watson's playing this week. I haven't done my rankings yet. My guess is that he will be a bottom QB1. He hasn't played football in like a year and a half, but he's a very good quarterback. He's a despicable human being, but he's a very good quarterback. Mm. And if you're okay starting him, I think Deshaun Watson is going to be in a lot of lineups this week. And he's probably going to be in a lot of lineups in the fantasy playoffs too, like it or not.
Good stuff there from the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano. Be safe. Talk next week. Thanks.
All right, pal. Thank you.
There's Michael Fabiano. You can find him, of course, SI.com and SiriusXM Fantasy Dirt. Very entertaining stuff there. We're back with more after this timeout.